of our information on multi-trophic interactions involves studies above ground, but as we now know, both above ground and below ground interactions can influence population structure. We carried out a study on a specific plant herbivore carnivore system that's important in southeastern U.S. that links both above ground and below ground. The above ground species is Micropleurus chrysepes, a solitary and specialized endoparasite of the heliothine complex. The herbivore is Heliocoverpacea larvae, or the corn earworm, and the plant is Gossypium hirsutum, specifically the leaves of cotton. The below ground species are the roots of cotton and Melodogyne incognita, or the root knot nematode, which is a sedentary gall-forming species that causes stunting of the plant and other adverse effects, and it has also been shown to sequester nitrogen in their roots, presumably at a cost to the nitrogen in the shoots. We looked at these interactions in terms of the plant direct and indirect chemical defenses. The indirect or the direct defenses includes toxins and digestibility reducers that are known to be, specifically the terpenoid aldehydes that are known to be toxic to lepidopterans. The indirect effect is a systemic response, which is volatiles induced above the point of damage and distal to the point of damage, and is attractive, but known to be attractive to members of the third trophic level. We have recently found that nitrogen levels affects both of these chemical pathways. Too little and too much nitrogen decreases their concentration, and the plants are no longer attractive to Micropleurus. Our specific objectives were to determine if foliage feeding, root feeding, and their combination affects attraction to the plants by Micropleurus, and to determine if foliage feeding, root feeding, and their combination affects induction of terpenoid aldehydes in the tissues, specifically the immature, mature leaves and the roots of the plant, and finally to determine if the nitrogen levels in the shoots of the plants is affected by root knot nematode parasitism. We obtained leaf damage by caging three-third instar corn earworm larvae on three leaves of a single plant on nine-week-old plants for 48 hours for the volatile collection and an additional 24 hours for the tissue and the flight tunnel bioassays. Root damage was obtained by inoculating the soil near the roots with 20,000 incognito eggs. The assays included flight tunnel dual choice tests, where the plants were excised above the point of damage so five leaves remained. Females were 2 to 3 days old, mated and fed at the time of the experiments. The plant tissue was analyzed using HPLC, specifically the immature, mature leaves and the roots, for their concentration of gossypyl, hemigossypylone, and the heliocytes 1 through 4. The terpenoid volatiles were analyzed using GCMS. Samples were collected from 12 to 3 in the day when the peak volatiles are known to be emitted from the whole plants. Authentic standards of osamine, beta-farnesene, and linalool were obtained to identify these compounds, and dimethylnonatrene was identified by from a mass spectrum provided by Jim Tomlinson. Unknowns were compared to an NIST mass spectral library. And finally, leaf and petiole nitrogen levels were obtained from 8 plants above the point of damage, so that came to 2 plants per treatment, and we looked at percent nitrogen in terms of dry weight. The results from the flight tunnel assay showed that on the left graph, where we're comparing to the control on damaged plants, that significantly more females preferred the corn earworm damaged plants over the controls, but they did not discriminate between the nematode damaged plants and the controls. The numbers above the bar are the number of females making a choice out of a total of 20 females tested. On the left, it shows that compared to the corn earworm and the nematode damaged plants, females preferred the corn earworm damage significantly more often than the nematode damage, whereas the corn earworm damaged plants and the combination of the corn earworm and the nematodes, they showed no preference. And the terpenoid aldehyde analyses for the immature leaves, mature leaves, and the roots, for the control black bars, nematode damaged white bars, corn earworm damaged dark gray, and the combination light gray, for hemigossypylone, gossypylone, H1 and H4 combined and H2 and H3 showed absolutely no difference in the terpenoid aldehyde concentrations. And the volatile analysis showed that the corn earworm damage, the top left, and the corn earworm plus the nematode damaged plants had similar chemical profiles. When you compare to the control, you also see that they were induced, so they emitted osamine, linalool, dimethyl nonatrien, and beta farnesene. In the nematode damaged plants, the top or the lower right-hand corner, there was some induction of dimethyl nonatrien and beta farnesene, but these were at very low levels and apparently weren't sufficient to attract Micropleurites. The control plant also had a peak in number 6, which was identified as pyridine from the library. And also, the nematode and the control plants had this substantial peak of alpha pinene, whereas these were substantially reduced in the corn earworm and the corn earworm and nematode damaged plants. And finally, the petiole and the leaf nitrogen levels show that there was no difference across any of the treatments with regard to their nitrogen content. So in summary, we found no terpenoid aldehyde induction in the leaves and the roots of cotton from a Bivari above ground, below ground, or their combination. In terms of induction of gossypole in the roots, this is in contrast to what was found by Kushku et al. They found melodogyne increased gossypole levels in the roots, but they used supplemental applications of bioregulators. And it's possible a cotton does not respond to melodogyne without these supplemental regulators. And in terms of the leaf tissue, we found no terpenoid aldehydes in the immature leaves, which is also in contrast to several other studies in cotton. But they used Spidoptera species, beady armyworm, which is primarily a leaf-feeding gregarious species, whereas we used a solitary, primarily fruit-feeding species, H. thea. And it's possible that the cotton plant does not respond the same with H. thea feeding. And finally, Besner et al. Also found that wireworm root feeding and bee armyworm leaf feeding increased both root and shoot terpenoid levels. We also found no evidence for a systemic induction, or we found evidence for a systemic induction from corn earworm, but none or very little from nematode feeding or attraction by Micropleurites. And finally, nitrogen levels above ground were not affected by parasitism by melodogyne. So in conclusion, often a loss of plant material in one compartment changes the level in another compartment. So these results are extraordinary as it shows no evidence of an interaction between an above-ground fruit-feeding species and a below-ground gall-forming species. More studies are needed to determine if these results can be generalized to other feeding paradigms. Thank you.